You are listening to a very special all readers mail submitted email podcast of the Punk News Podcast on the week of May 29, 2013. So stay tuned to hear your letters read live on the air. Yo, 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 Punk News. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. And let me tell you, today we have a very special episode. No, we're not talking about divorce or teen pregnancy. We're doing an all-reader email podcast. Did you know, you beautiful readers, that you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org? That's podcast@punknews.org. Adam, what's that email address? podcast@punknews.org, and you can always reach us there if you want to say anything about the podcast or anything about punknews.org. As you longtime listeners may know, that we used to read emails every week, but suddenly we stopped. Well, as it turns out, our email system was hella clogged. After hours of searching, tightening, loosening, and squeezing, Sound Guy Nairman was able to clear out the blockage, and would you believe all the emails just exploded out of the pipeline and all over his face, just like that episode of The Little Rascals. So today, we're going to read a lot of the back emails, and we're going to play you some songs that were just submitted to us by readers just like you. We present them to you as just stuff that's been sent to us and not necessarily stuff we've listened to. So I hope you check it. And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And with me tonight on the podcast, we've got a jam-packed house. First of all is the Don of Punk News, Mr. Fortune 500 himself, managing editor Adam White. Adam, how are you?
That was incredibly scatological. Intro.
Scatological means like obsessed with like shit.
Yeah. There was a lot of, well, I mean, I guess you were making Little Rascals references, but the whole time I was thinking shit. But then, you know, I change diapers for a living now, so that's what happens.
True.
So, and anyways, also
with me is the Don Drapier of News Interviews and Toodaloo's Interviews Editor, Kira Wisniewski. Kira, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great.
And of course, with us tonight is Sound Guy Nairman, and you should all send Sound Guy Nairman an email thanking him, because he literally spent hours and hours fixing the emails, then sorting out the old emails just for this special podcast, just so you listeners can be heard. Nairman, tell us a little bit about how you put all this together.
Oh, thanks, John. Well, it turns out Rich, and you guys may have heard of Rich, used to do the handling of the email, and then all of a sudden he disappeared, you know, unannounced, and kind of left the email just hanging. And so once we got the email box back in control, I kind of went through everything for the past year, read everything everyone sent in, and picked the best of the best so we could review it here on the show tonight. So I hope everyone enjoys.
Well, Nairman, thanks for all the hard work. We really appreciate it. And without further ado, let us get started. I have here in my hand a large burlap bag. On it are the words U.S. Mail crossed out, and written below it is punknews.org in Sharpie. Adam White, managing editor, would you do us the honor and reach into that burlap bag and pull out our very first email for the All Email Podcast?
I really want to make like a burlap bag sound effect, but I don't know what the burlap. That sounds more like the sea. And that's kind of like sprinkler on the lawn. Anyways, okay. Well, my God. All right. This is going to be a banner show for us. I'd like to say before we get started here that if this whole thing is horrible, it's the fault of you, our listeners, because this is your crap we're reading. So this is all on you guys.
Adam, I think our readers and listeners are wonderful, intelligent, educated people. And I think all their emails are superb. Mm-hmm. I wish you wouldn't speak down about them in my presence. I think they're wonderful people.
Oh, no. I mean, of course, the ones listening right now are wonderful people. But, but you know, we've had to weed out the bad weeds. Anyways, okay, so we're going to start with a follow-up to the email that we read on last week's. What, you didn't like that? I avoided mixing metaphors there. we're going to follow up to an email that we read on last week's show, basically about how we suck, and we didn't really take issue with it because we do. So this is a follow-up email from Bobby in reference to last week's discussion. He said, hey, guys and gal, I appreciate the time you guys spent on the email I sent last week. I thought last week's pod was fantastic. It's called a podcast, Bobby. Obviously, I have no beef with negative discussion, especially when it's warranted, cassettes. And I thought the overall quality was great. You guys aren't even remotely defensive. It was all accountability, which was nice. Then he goes on to say nice things about all three of us, and I don't really know if I should read those because it sounds kind of self-congratulatory. But the one thing
that I'll read them for you, Adam.
I can do self-congratulatory. Let's just do it. So he said, Kira, I know you guys have to scramble to get lineups on a weekly basis. So maybe I need to do a better job remembering that process when people aren't always 100% prepared for the story. We call that the lowering our listener expectations factor. Adam. I thought it was insightful about how you talked about comments driving stories selected for discussion and how maybe in the future stories shouldn't be included if there's nothing but shoulder shrugs to greet them. Also, you are handsome and I want to give you money. Chris, you didn't actually say those bits. I'm going to wreck this whole show. Chris, you were a really good sport about how I ended that email, especially because the email complained about caddy pot shots, and that's kind of exactly what I did to you. I actually wanted to fully take back the name-dropping grievance. I think it's cool that you know bands and have road stories and party stories and inside info, etc. I think I was just a little salty about the no love for Banner Pilot. That said, I still stand by the food call-out. Kira calling you a dick was hilarious. So there you go. We got Bobby to resubscribe, and then he said we should all become gym managers because we have the power of resubscription in our midst. So I don't know. Thanks. I like the fact that Bobby kind of gives a shit, and it always sort of weirds me out when anyone admits that they listen to this show. So yeah, thanks for the email, Bobby, and for the concern and for trying to keep us on our toes. I got to take issue with this no love for Banner Pilot. Go back to issue or two issues. Go back two episodes and listen to that. I was trying to remember the name because I'm an idiot, but we all expressed the fact that Heartbeat Specific is awesome. So that's not no love. That's love. It's just forgetful love. You know, forgetful love is still love. No one's going to back me up on this. So fine. Okay.
Back. Picking up what you're putting down, all of it.
All right. So anyways, that was from Bobby. Thanks, Bobby.
All right. Next, let's get into some legal discussion. This is from Patrick. Here's what Patrick said. Hey, podcasters. I really enjoyed your conversation about the Tupac Coachella hologram, especially Adam's point about adding some dialogue. Perhaps you can shed some light on the politics of the situation, though. At what point does making a hologram of someone become invasion of privacy or copyright infringement? I assume that whoever is in charge of Tupac's estate gave the go-ahead for the project, but is it possible to use the likeness of a dead person for advertisements and the like? Tupac saying, "What up, Coachella?" as far as I know, is an endorsement. Is there anything legally stopping him, me, from using Abraham Lincoln to promote my new fall fashion line? Well, Patrick, that is an excellent question. First of all, Patrick, there, I guess a lot of people do or don't know this. In the United States, we have two levels of government. We've got federal government and we have state government. Federal government means the federal government can rule over certain things, while the state governments can rule over other things. Copyright is strictly a federal matter. And the reason I bring this up is because under copyright, you can only copyright specific things. Included in that is literary works, musical works, dramatic works, pantomiming, pictures, movies, sound recordings, and architectural works. There's other things within that category, but people is not one of them. So you can't copyright a person's likeness. However, you could copyright a photo of somebody or a movie of somebody or a painting of somebody. What would be more applicable to the Tupac thing would be what every state has their own. So there is no federal right to that. However, every state has their own publicity laws, right of publicity laws, and privacy laws. What that means is when you're somebody famous or even somebody not famous, depending on what state you're in, you have different rights, exclusive rights to how you can promote yourself. For example, if you're a celebrity, a soap company can't just put a picture of you with the soap and say that you endorse it. They have to purchase that right from you to say that you are endorsing that item. With dead people, there are less rights, but there still are some rights up until a certain year after their death. What that means is publicity rights in every state, it varies, that after somebody's death, the estate gets so many years after their death to promote their brand. It's usually 50, 60, or 70 years. If you remember a little while ago, I think it was Fred Astaire, they had him dancing with a vacuum cleaner to sell that. They had to pay the Fred Astaire estate to have him dancing with a vacuum cleaner. But a lot of those famous people from the 10s, 20s, and 30s, the time frame is coming up, which means that that companies can use these long dead people, their likenesses, to promote whatever they want without paying a fee to anybody. So directly answer your question, can you use Abraham Lincoln to promote your fashion line? The answer is yes, because he's been dead so long that he's no longer protected by right of privacy or right of publicity laws. The one caveat to that is you can still use an image as a trademark. For example, if somebody has a soap brand and it's Abraham Lincoln soap brand, you probably could not sell your own Abraham Lincoln soap, but you could sell your own Abraham Lincoln cantaloupes or Abraham Lincoln telephone, something like that. So I hope that answers your question, Patrick. If you're more interested in that, you should read 17 U.S.C. 101 through 220, I think it is, and that'll give you a good explanation of how copyright works.
And your question is moot because Abraham Lincoln was a fictional character anyways.
Well, I was actually going to say, because Abraham Lincoln was a public figure, the same laws don't apply to him because he was a president.
Vampire hunter.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, this happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger when he became governor of California. A lot of his rights to those promotional things, and people could put his face on shirts and stickers and stuff because he was the governor. And once you become a public figure like that or a public servant, you lose a lot of those rights. That was it.
I don't actually know.
Thanks, Nervous.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to move on here. I'm going to use this chance to open a beer because I didn't want to make too much noise. I'm not chewing on the show, though. For the record, I've never chewed on this show because I'm a gentleman. So
I've got a souffle here. Later on, I'm going to go hang out with Bono.
Mm. Well, when Bono calls, right? What are you going to do? Okay, so this is an email from Ricky. And I can't say Ricky without thinking about the Trailer Park Boys, but anyways. So he wrote us and he said, "Hi, guys. First of all, let me just say that in regards to the email that you read on last week's episode," last week being who knows what because I don't know when these emails came in.
The date's on this, boo-boo. He wrote this on May 20th. It just happened.
Kira, fine. Okay, there's like five columns in this spreadsheet. I don't know how you expect me to organize all this. Okay, so in regards to the email that you read on last week's episode, I actually enjoy the disorganization of the podcast. I think it adds character and humor to the show. It shows that you don't take yourselves too seriously, and I like that. As someone who has been listening to the podcast since it began, I can say that I have laughed quite a bit, whether it was from one of Rich's rants or one of the host's funny comments. Had it not been for the podcast, I would probably not have gotten into bands like Direct Hit, The Holy Mess, Fake Problems, The Menzingers, and more. That's crazy. Also, I was convinced partially by Kira's love of the Bouncing Souls to go see them last summer in L.A. Well, that and the fact that the Menzingers were opening for him. That's pretty cool.
Yeah!
I gotta say. Anyways, in regards to this week's podcast, I was hoping that you could. And yes, I feel totally like I'm asking my ninth grade English teacher for extra help on a paper. Talk in a little depth about what Punk News wants when a reader contributes a story. Not what a story should be about, but how a story should be written. I've contributed five or six stories since I created my account, and I have noticed that they get rewritten significantly. I'm not angry about my stories being rewritten by any means, but I just want to help out where and when I can. How can I make my contributions better? And this is from, again, Ricky. So this is sort of a tough one because there's a point where if you are submitting news and your writing is actually of a certain quality, we're a little bit more likely to distrust that it was something original that came in. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but what I mean is that very, very early on, the way that that Punk News worked was it worked a lot like Slashdot, the tech news site, worked at the time. And it was actually running very similar software to Slashdot. And I don't know if Slashdot does this these days, and I think they still do. But hold on, this let me confirm with the magic of boring live internet looking. Yeah, okay. So if you go take a look at Slashdot right now, they do what Punk News, what they do, what they've always done, and what Punk News used to do years ago, which is someone would write in a story, they would just basically put the name of the person who submitted the story, and then put in a block quote the entire original blob of text that the person submitted. And they may add a little bit to it afterwards, but they wouldn't do any kind of editing except for maybe trimming what the person submitted. So they were just kind of verbatim plopping the stuff that people posted up there. We had problems with that very early on because people would submit stuff that they had gone and grabbed from another music site. And us looking at the post, it just looks like a perfectly well-written post, and it doesn't occur to us necessarily that, this came from a lot of the sites that were around. This came from PastePunk or PunkRocks.net or PunkUpdates.com or I can't remember who else was around back in the day there, but that it came from one of those other punk sites. And we like those other punk sites. We don't want to rip them off or anything like that, but it was a little bit unwieldy for us to take this blob of text and go, is this really this person's submission, or is it something that they copy and pasted? And it's not that we assumed people were maliciously copying and pasting or lifting things either. It was kind of like they were just submitting news, so the easiest way to submit the news was just to, copy it and dump it in. Now, since those early days, we are encouraging people with, a box on the form to actually give us the source for the news so we can go look it up. But still, we tend to err on the side of caution, and when something comes in, do a bit of a rewrite on it anyways. So it's probably nothing to do with your English or your grammar or anything like that, and just us wanting to make sure that, we're actually posting stuff that we've written and have processed, and we aren't just posting stuff that's come in verbatim because we can get into problems. So I know it's kind of a boring answer to that question, but that's what it is. The one thing that you can do, though, is like absolutely keep up on submissions, because the more that we start to recognize you coming in, the more we kind of trust your name as it's being attached to news. And that's actually how a lot of our people ended up joining the staff, was just they were contributing stuff and we came to recognize them. And then we contacted them and said, hey, come and more formally write stuff for us. More formally being, you can hang out with us on Facebook because that's about as much of an organization as we are. By all means, do that. The other thing to do too is, and this sounds totally obvious, but if you've written it and it's completely your writing, you can by all means say in the submission, I wrote this, feel free to use it. And, someone will see that. So I don't know if they will, but you could try it that way. What I would really suggest is that don't really hang your hat on writing fully formatted news when you're submitting it. It's probably safer just to kind of like get the facts, get the sources that you've got it from, help the editor that's going to be assembling the story to, help them do their job and actually make sure that that's real, because we really, really, really want to try to avoid posting stuff that's either not true or not relevant or, half true or anything like that. Because we've never really been a rumor site, and we've been a site that record labels tend to be nice to, because, when news comes in that's kind of crazy, sometimes we'll actually go call someone and ask them, which a lot of sites don't do. So, we're trying to maintain that, I think, more than anything. So, yeah. Sorry, that was boring. Anyways.
It all makes sense, though. So, I think that's a good answer. Actually, I could, add really short to that, is that when I first started being a news editor, I did just kind of, I barely touched, edited a submission that came in, and then it turned out it was from another news site, and then I had to, go apologize and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't, I wasn't lifting from you, it came through the submissions, it wasn't cited, and,
It's tough without having, paid people on staff to go out and to actually vet this stuff, so, we do best we can,
So yeah, so that it a very, very reasonable explanation, Adam. Good job. Woo. I'm gonna read a novel of an email now. Actually, I'm gonna paraphrase it. I feel a little bad because it was actually a really well written, nice email. So okay, anyways, this email came from Mark in Ottawa, December 20th, talked about bands that we grew up with. And I remember that podcast I talked about, like, surprisingly, the Bouncing Souls. But he writes about how he thinks that in the punk community, I'm going to paraphrase him a little bit, in the punk community, it's kind of unique because we do have these bands that really, like, kind of, like, you know, speak to our hearts in a way that maybe some of the giant mega legend bands, he says, U2, Rolling Stone, Black Sabbath, probably you only see a couple times live, and only in, like, a super big atmosphere, which, true, good point. And so he talks about how in, the spreadsheet just went crazy. Back in 2001, I was 17, turning 18, and going to a lot of punk gigs with my older brother, who grew up on late 80s and early 90s punk. It was mid-September, and many American bands on the road had canceled their tours that week, as it was right after 9/11. It was a rainy Tuesday night, and we went to a small art gallery downtown to see a punk thrash band. How do you say that? Saskatchewan? Also in Canadian, called Layaway Place.
Kira.
I'm sorry!
Saskatchewan.
Don't be mad at me.
Okay. Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. I can't even say that word. Saskatchewan. Turns out that we got there, the singer from Layaway Play was really sick, and they probably weren't going to play at all. Then there were 15 people in the gallery. If you counted everyone, the local opening bands and the sound guy, we considered leaving, but they decided that, you know, basically to stay. There was an awkward-looking band with a strange name, Smack and Isaiah, who we reluctantly decided to stay, thinking they would probably be metal. 30 seconds into the first song, I had a new favorite band who would define the person who I am to this day. Smack and Isaiah later changed their name to A William Scream and have since built a modest following. Blah, blah, blah. I could go on forever about how amazingly fast, tight, and intense the band is. I'm sure anyone associated with punk news is aware. They're super nice guys as well. And then he talks about how his own local band was able to play with them a bunch of times, and it goes on and on. Again, I'm sorry, Mark, that I'm paraphrasing this because it is a very, like, sweet story. But basically, it all, in summary, he says, support the small gigs. Go see bands you've never heard of once in a while. You may discover a new favorite band. Many other types of music don't necessarily don't have the accessibility of club shows that punk does, so take advantage of it. So I think that's great, and I think it's smart and it's important. I definitely grew up in, like, I grew up in Southwest Florida in a place called Fort Myers, which I'm sure you or someone you know has, like, a grandparent or a relative that lives there who is over the age of 75, because that's what happens in Fort Myers. But I thought, and I remember this actually really clearly. So when I went to college in Miami and I started to get involved with college radio, like, in the very first days, and they probably don't even remember this, I was, like, in the radio station, the college radio station office, and I was kind of, like, trying to find out about local punk shows because I, you know, was new to Miami. I didn't really know what was good. And they're very college radio-ish people, but I'm totally friends with them now. But they just had that kind of college radio attitude to them, and they're like, oh, like, not really, kind of too cool for school. I'm like, oh, well, there's, like, a really good punk scene in Fort Myers, so it was really great. Like, the naive 18-year-old I was, which I still stand by, and they're like, oh, well, if you think that was good, then you'll be fine here. But I think it's still, like, a really important part, the point that Mark made. Like, it's great to go get involved in your local scene and go to local shows, go to skate parks, and just get involved and, like, discover new music, discover your new band, your new favorite band. When I interviewed Rachel Taft, who does Feed the Scene, who is amazing, 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 she basically says the same sentiment, and that's part of her mission. Like, so what she does, to paraphrase, is she feeds and houses bands that are touring that, like, can't really, you know, just kind of gives them a free meal and a free place to stay if they're playing in Baltimore, which is so rad. And her whole philosophy behind it is, like, if I can get that band to go to that, like, that further city or play that extra gig, like, who knows, like, maybe that night somebody will end up at that show who didn't even, like, mean to go that night, who didn't even mean to see that band, but suddenly has, like, their new favorite band. And I just love that, and I think it's so rad. So big ups to Rachel. Good email, Mark. And thanks. Let's move on.
All right, here is our next email from Jason W., dated November 30th, 2012. Here's what Jason W. said. I've never emailed a podcast before, but today is the day. In the most recent podcast dated November 28, 2012, John Gentile, that's me, mentioned that no one talked about Quicksand since their breakup in the late 90s until their recent reunion in 2011. This is simply not true. Quicksand is probably one of the most important bands that came from the decade who influenced a bunch of bands since. It's not surprising that someone that was excited for a Steve Ignorant or an Amoebics reunion show would be so ignorantly blissful about Quicksand's importance and reverence within punk hardcore. It's probably just not his scene. I know it's just his opinion, but maybe it would be great if the folks on the roundtable would be a little bit more informed on their opinions or just not say anything at all because it makes them look silly. With that, keep up the good work. I do enjoy the show because it keeps me informed on this little subculture of ours while I'm just trying to get through another mind-sucking day in a cubicle. Thanks, Jason W. Well, Jason, I mean, you're right. It's not my scene. I would suggest to you that maybe you should check out Steve Ignorant and Amoebics because those are fabulous bands. When I was talking about Quicksand, I wasn't dissing on Quicksand. I was just saying the scenes that I'm in, people don't really talk about that band so much. And then when they reunited, I heard about them all over. So it wasn't a diss on Quicksand. I was just saying that no one was really talking about that band for a good decade or so, at least not the scenes I was in. So I'm sorry you feel that way if you felt that Quicksand was being dissed on. But if they weren't, I was just saying in the circles that I run in, no one was talking about Quicksand. I think what we could take from this email is that with regards to music, people really shouldn't like say, oh, you don't like this band, you suck, or you don't like this band, you suck. I found that if you just keep your mind open and listen to all sorts of music, and when people throw something your way, check it out, it's infinitely more enjoyable. And I've never been sorry that I've explored music. I've only been sorry that I haven't explored certain music earlier. So my point is, you know, punk now is great, but punk rock and history great too. So I would say just listen to punk rock from – actually, I would say listen to all music from all genres across all the decades and just see what you like and see what you don't like. I wouldn't really get too caught up on – arguing whether or not a certain band is the best band or the most influential band, or saying other bands shouldn't be listened to. I would just say focus on the music that you like. And with that, I think we're going to cut for a tune from Post Teens, who sent us a track to check out. And you beautiful Punk News listeners can always send us some of your own music to play, but it has to be your music. It can't be a song you like. It has to be a music that you wrote or that a band that you're a part of. And you can send that to podcast@punknews.org. And we're going to break for a song by the Post Teens. And when we come back, I think Armando might join us on the round table. Calling it stupid, 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 yeah, yeah, I'm calling it stupid, calling it dumb, I'm calling it ignorant, cause my brain's gone numb, I'm calling it stupid, I'm calling it dumb, I'm calling it retarded. Just for fun, no, well, I'm not sick, as you may know, but my brain sure is working slow, no, well, I'm not sick, as you can see, but I got a clear case, well, mental deficiency, calling it stupid. Calling it stupid, calling it stupid, calling it stupid, calling it stupid, yeah, 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 yeah. Love mental deficiency. Calling it stupid. 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 Yeah, yeah. I'm calling it stupid. I'm calling it dumb. I'm calling it ignorant. Cause my brain's gone numb. I'm calling it stupid. I'm calling it dumb. I'm calling it retarded. Just for fun. Yeah, yeah. And we are back, and back with us now is Armando. Armando, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I woke up from a really nice nap.
Nice. As I'm sure the listeners know, Armando was a news editor. So, Armando, we're just going to keep rolling along with the news, and you can jump in the mix a little bit later on, you know, get your sea legs and everything.
Yeah.
Word. All right, I think Kira's got the next letter. Is that correct?
I do. Let me reach into this burlap sack and get it out. It's from... It's from Delilah. She wrote to us on August 2nd, 2012, and she said, "Hi, I've been listening to older episodes of the podcast to catch up, so this isn't really relevant to current news, but I need to write in regardless. At the start of the episode from February 2011, I almost skipped the episode because the first topic was an article regarding sexism in the scene, a topic I am very emotionally bound to, but one that often exhausts me. I have to say, however, that not only was I relieved by everyone's comments on the podcast, I have actually been restored faith in the power of discussion. As a woman who is very conscious of sexism issues, I don't always agree with every suggestion made by other feminists," she puts that in quotes, "and the worst is when I am categorized as one for being concerned with what I consider to be human rights. Then I run into the dilemma of trying to express my opinion without giving the often assumed impression that I hate men," also in quotes. "I felt the episode, especially Rich's comments, brought everything back to a grounded, intelligent level of discussion, which in my opinion is the most important aspect of any social issue. In other words, even though this is coming at a strange time, thank you for your thoughts, and I'm glad your voices have microphones." So that is what Delilah said to us, which is awesome, because I do really think that those are probably some of the best things that we've done on the site, is have these... To kind of reiterate, this was, we did these a while ago, but we started doing these essays, op-ed-ish kind of things, of various people talking about sexism in the scene. And it did spark a lot of discussion. And quite frankly, some of the comments in the commenting section was just like, I totally hear what Delilah was saying, because it was just like, it made my stomach churn, honestly. Like, some of it was just like so misogynist and just so terrible. And I think it is very easily to be marginalized as a female involved in the punk scene. So I think that those things that we did were pretty rad. I guess kind of a question that I have for you listeners, and maybe y'all could jump in on this too, the gentlemen who are with me right now. We had at the time a little bit of an internal discussion as whereas sexism in the scene is an issue, always an issue, and it's not really going away, and it's always good to talk about, but there was a moment where I think that we kind of thought that we had reached a little bit of a saturation point in terms of us posting these kind of op-ed-ish essays on the site. So do you think that that's something that we could should maybe bring back, and then if so, which way? Like, how can we keep it fresh? And how can we keep the conversation about sexism in the scene productive?
Speaking strictly from an editorial perspective, and not necessarily like speaking to the severity of the issue or anything like that, the format of Punk News makes editorial content kind of tough because we don't really have a dedicated section for it. So it ends up in kind of the main news feed, and because these stories always end up being big ones, they just kind of end up dominating the main news feed. So then if you have a bunch of them in succession, it kind of looks like that's the note that you know that we're playing over and over and over again. Really, I mean, in some, you know, perfect world future version of Punk News, we'll have some sort of, you know, some sort of sidebar where we can have kind of like these ongoing deeper discussions about ongoing issues, but that just doesn't really exist right now. So it becomes, I guess, a bit of like a content placement issue for us when we get into this cycle of posting like editorial after response to the editorial. So for the most part, we don't tend to do it at all on any issue, sexism or otherwise. And it's just mainly kind of like a formatting thing at this point. But yeah, I mean, like it would absolutely make sense for us to have like a better format to have these kind of discussions and to facilitate these kind of discussions because, you know, they're important, but just that's kind of what happens with whenever we get into the cycle of doing one of these things. And it always kind of sucks because we'll generally post one of these because we'll come across one of the articles or on someone's blog, or someone writes us in with it, and it's really, really good. It's really well written. It's really thoughtful. But the problem is that ends up kind of snowballing, and then at what point do you stop? Because we could keep posting one of those articles every night, and at some point there it starts to, I don't know, distract from everything else that Punk News is doing. Not that, you know, us posting about, you know, Green Day tour dates is all that important. So I don't know. That's where I'm going with this, is that we really don't have a format right now that allows for kind of like, you know, deep discussion of these things, and we probably should.
Adam, if the readers and listeners want to weigh their 2 cents in, or let us know if they want more or less of those articles, how do they do that?
Oh, well,
email a certain email address?
Well, I don't know if I have a yahoo.com address. I did. email us at podcast@punknews.org and know us what you guys, you know, what you actually want on, I guess, both this show and on the site. And I suppose there's probably a better way to actually talk about what you want on the site than emailing the podcast address. But who cares? Email the podcast address, because we're the only people that listen to you. So there you go. Silence.
Well, yeah. All right. I think, Adam, the next letter's got your name written in crown right on the front.
It does. Okay, this comes from June 27th, 2012. It's from Joey. And Joey says, "Is Souvenirs played in the latest episode? The post says it is, but I didn't hear it." No.
It should have been, though, because I submitted that song.
Oh, really?
I did.
In June? You remember in June of last year?
Yeah, I remember, because I'm friends with one of the guys in Souvenirs, and I'm pretty sure the Joey in question is Joey Cahill from 6131 Records.
I was intending to make this into a joke, and you actually have a real thing about this. Do you have that song, Mondo?
It's on my computer. As to whether or not it actually got put in the podcast, I don't know, but I remember emailing it to either Narryman or John.
All right, well, screw it. This is a song from Souvenirs.
Thank you.
All right, Punk News listeners, you asked for it, you got it. A song from Souvenirs, punknews.org, delivering what the listeners want. And this next letter is from my hometown, from a guy named Jason. Here's what Jason said. He said, hello. He said, good morning. My name is Jason. I live in the city of brotherly love. I remember downloading and listening to the very first podcast with Brian, Adam, and Rich when they were hosting and commenting. I discovered many bands, Gates, Dikembe, Red City Radio, from listening to the podcast. Believe it or not, I have actually followed and listened to all of your episodes over the months and years. I'm sure you guys have something lined up for the 100th episode, but as per request from the 98th and 99th episode, I felt compelled to write in and make my recommendation. Could you please bring back Brian and Rich with Adam to host and moderate the 100th episode, complete with similar banter and cynicism? Also, some choice picks in Midwestern punk country, or no, I'm sorry, in the Midwestern punk category for the episodes. Song selections would be awesome. Either way, I will be tuning in to listen. Keep up the great work, guys. P.S. A track or two from Philly bands, i.e. Restorations, Luther, and etc., would be cool, but not essential. Best, Jason from Philly. Well, Jason, thanks for listening, and honestly, we really do appreciate you listening to all the podcasts. I know it means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to all the editors. And you asked for it, just like people ask for a jam from Souvenirs. You asked for it. You want an episode with Adam. Adam White is right here. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
So anyways, Brian... oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
I don't even know where I was going to go with this.
Oh, Brian will be back soon. He's on the podcast fairly often. Rich will be back every once in a long while. He's got some other things that... well, like real-life commitments, like being married and all that fun stuff. So he's on the podcast less, but I think he'll be back on sometime. Maybe sometime we'll put together a super old-school podcast with the classic lineup of Adam, Rich, and Brian. I think that would be pretty cracking. As for the bands Restorations and Luther, I know Brian Yancey, who lives in Philadelphia, and I live outside Philadelphia. I know Brian Yancey is a big fan of both those bands, and I think he's played them before, and if not, I'm sure we'll play them soon. Otherwise, Jason, man, come see me and the Yance at shows in Philly. I know we'll be at Flag this summer. I'll be at the Melvins. I'll be at Flock of Seagulls. And I'll
of course
be
you'll
at,
be at the Melvins.
You know it, baby. And I was actually at the Melvins just 2 weeks ago, and I almost was at them 1 week ago. But I decided too much. Well, I didn't want to become a Melvins junkie, if you will. Anyways, yo, Jason, come say hi at the show sometimes, and we'll buy each other a Coke or a Sprite or a ginger ale. And thanks for listening, Jason. I appreciate you talking to us. Armando, are you ready for this bad boy, your very first one of the podcast?
My very first one.
A quick interjection there. Jason from Philly, obviously we didn't see your email in a timely manner, and I'm real sorry about that. But... is there a weird echo right now?
There's a weird echo. As soon as he started talking about the Melvins, we got this really epic echo that kicked
in. It's because the Melvins are the power of the Melvins. Whenever you just mention them, things get weird. Things get funky. Things get strange.
Is it better now, Nairman?
All anyway, you fools have your headphones plugged in?
I got mine plugged in.
I just wanted to input that... sorry, Jason, we didn't get to your email in a timely manner, obviously. But I do think, kind of like tagging on what we're saying to the past email that we got, is like, readers, you should definitely send in your suggestions for what you want to hear. Because now we have a system in which the emails will be checked. So if you have ideas and suggestions for emails, or for podcasts rather, email them to us, and we will hopefully address them in a much more timely manner than we did your email.
How do they contact us?
They can just email us at podcast@punknews.org.
That's right, listeners. podcast@punknews.org.
Cool. All right. I'm ready for this question.
Hold on out, Armando. Do you see it?
Yes. This is an interesting one. It's from Jose from, what is this, May 28th, 2012. So essentially exactly almost a year ago to the day. All right. Anywho, so his question goes, I listened to your podcast on Toka, the Toka in question being Matt Toka. Just hit him up on Facebook because he talks to everyone. I caught a show at the Warped Tour kickoff, and he was the best act of the night, no joke. Never heard of him either, but he fucking blew my mind away. I looked him up when I got home and has similar story to me of parents being in jail, being homeless, and drug problems and shit. My brother committed suicide 2 years ago, and Toka's whole thing is don't let the shit your family puts on you define you. So whatever. I just thought I'd let you guys know. Jose. All right. Jose, I may not like Matt Toka's music. I may not have listened to more than 30 seconds of it. But if he keeps you posy, then that's all that really matters. And we're kind of jerks anyways. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, our taste in music kind of sucks. So keep Toka-ing on and don't let nobody bring you down.
I'm going to jump on your train there, Amanda. And I got to say, I'm always saying, be open-minded about music. Be open-minded about music. I listened to Matt Toka's EP and I was not impressed. But because Jose said it was such a wild act, if I'm at a festival and Matt Toka's there, I will go check it out. If he plays Philadelphia and the price is reasonable, I'll go take a listen. And Jose, you'll be the first to know what I think of Matt Toka live. I promise.
All right. Now, before we leave the Toka topic, well, for you, what would be a reasonable price to see Matt Toka in a club show in Philly?
15 or less.
15 or less?
Yeah.
Is this before or after fees?
It depends, man, because like flag tickets had insane fees. That like the tickets were only $18, but fees were like $14. But like sometimes fees were only like $3. So I'm gonna say if Matt Toka is in Westchester, I'll pay up to $20 to see him. If he's in Philadelphia, no, I'm sorry. If he's in Westchester, I'll pay up to $15 total to see him. If he's in Philadelphia, I'll pay up to $20 to see him. If I'm at a festival and he's there, I will see him no matter what.
Okay, that's respectable.
Anybody else? Really wanted to like jump in and start playing the Toasters' "Don't Let the Bastards Grind You Down" after you told them to stay posy, but
yeah,
I totally didn't have the setup to do that.
And I was gonna say we Narryman can make it happen.
I know, but it's I just wanted to let everyone know that I had this really funny thing I was gonna do.
We could pretend right now. Doesn't the horn line go?
Yeah, you know.
And then just pretend I'm Bucket and then go to your iTunes and realize that it's better if you just listen to it there.
Yeah. Anyways, there you go. Next, listen to the Toasters. Next, good night, everyone.
Yeah. next question is for John, and it's not about the Melvins, so he might not be as stoked about it.
I might not know how to answer. It's not about the Melvins. Anyway, this is from Ricky. Date it's May 13, 2012, and here's what Ricky said. He said, "Hey, so an odd question occurred to me after reading about Tommy Gabel, now known as Lara Jane Grace, coming out as transgender. First off, more power to her. I think she's an incredibly strong and brave person because even in a community as accepting as the punk community, coming out as transgender had to be extremely difficult. I truly hope that this transition is made easier for her and she's given nothing but love and support. Anyway, it got me thinking, especially in this increasingly conservative country, how are transgenders affected by marriage laws? For example, if in a year or so she decides to have the reassignment surgery, does this legally make her a woman? Is there a legal process for that anyway? Would she and her wife's marriage then become invalid depending on where they live, if there is a ban on same-sex marriage? Truly not to be a dick or to make a joke, just genuinely curious. I don't know much about the transgender community and all they have to deal with. Thought this might be a good place to ask and see if anybody has an idea. Thanks. Signed, Ricky." Ricky, you know, that's a great question, and the answer is nobody's sure of the answer because the laws are changing all the time and it's different in every state. As I mentioned before, there's federal and state laws. Marriage is strictly governed by states, meaning states decide what constitutes a marriage, be it gender or how long people live together, that kind of thing. We're seeing an interesting thing with gay marriage in that a lot of people are pushing for marriage to become a federal thing instead of a state thing. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. I think what will happen is the Supreme Court will make rules regarding what laws cannot be used to ban marriage, and so it'll be filtered through the states that way through the 14th Amendment. More specifically, the answer is how does being a transgender affect someone's rights with regards to marriage, driver's license, birth certificates, that kinds of things. And the answer is it's different in every state. In some states, you have to get a sexual reassignment surgery, and then you can marry someone of the opposite gender. In other states, you can simply say, well, I'm a woman or I'm a man, and then you can marry someone of the opposite gender. I think we're going to see more cohesion in the next 10 years, 20 years, and it'll be more similar in different states. And also, now that homosexual marriage is legal in a lot of states, it almost makes the point moot, I guess. So anyways, the point is that it's different in every state, and it's an exciting time, I guess, when it comes to constitutional law. And with regards to same-sex marriage or transgender marriage, in some states it depends if you've got sexual reassignment surgery. Some states it doesn't. In some states, even if you've got sexual reassignment surgery, they still won't let you get married to a person of the opposite gender. So that's the answer to that. The answer is it depends, and there is no answer.
That is a very excellent assessment of the question, John.
I think Kira is going to introduce a song for us right now.
Oh, all right. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce a song that we got through.
I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. You were supposed to read one more email. That's my fault.
Yeah,
Kira, why don't you read an email for us first?
I thought Mondo was reading an email next.
Oh, really?
I read the email next.
I'm all confused now.
You yes. are. You're messing it up.
Yeah,
stop
well,
it.
All right, Armando, let's hear a jam. Let's hear email.
All right, this one goes, hey, guys, I'm emailing in response. Oh, actually, no, wait. This is from Peter No One, or Peter Nunn, emailed May 3rd, 2012. May of last year was a popular month for us to be picking questions from. Anywho, the topic is fans that suck. Hey guys, I'm emailing in response to the question, do fans influence whether you go to a show? And I'd say yes, depending on the band. With a band like Gaslight, the audience could be full of complete douchebags and I would just try to ignore them because I absolutely love Gaslight, but it would definitely affect my enjoyment of it. With a smaller band, however, the audience would deter me. I went to see a band called American Aquarium in Raleigh, North Carolina a while back, and Raleigh is kind of preppy. I found out that night they're Lucero-esque alt-country, so I guess that sound doesn't always lend itself to preppy redneck douchebag people, and almost everyone at the show sucked. A friend of mine was repeatedly groped, people stood in front of my short girlfriend so she couldn't see, just stuff like that. The show kind of sucked, and I definitely would avoid seeing them at least in that setting again. My two cents, thanks, Peter Nunn or No One. I'm not really sure how to pronounce his last name. Anywho, I would agree with Peter, though. I feel depending on the band, the fans attending said show would influence my decision on whether or not I would actually want to go. I think a prime example is for most 80s hardcore bands, the crowds tend to kind of blow, and I usually just avoid going to them, at least especially out here, unless I really... have nothing else to do. Because I remember, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Youth Brigade, though. But I went to go, so we'll just assume that it was Youth Brigade. And this is nothing, this is no ill will on Youth Brigade because I love that band. And so I went to go see Youth Brigade, and there were skinheads there, and I got punched upside the face. And needless to say, I don't like dealing with that. So I don't know if I'd ever go back to a Youth Brigade show, but I'll blast their records every day. But so yes. The kinds of crowds a band can bring do deter me from going to shows, especially when they're racist and only feel like beating the crap out of me.
I gotta say, Armando, I'm gonna disagree with you on that. Is I'll go to a show like no matter what if I want to see the band, like depending on the type of show, I might stand in the back or the front or whatever. But I mean, if I really want to see a band, I'll go even if I don't like the audience at all. So.
And I mean, in some cases, I'll suck it up. But I mean, in the case of skinheads, I don't know if I want to suck that up.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah.
All right, and so let's break the song, y'all. So this actually came to our email years ago, August of 2010, actually. So their email read, "Punk News, we are a reviver from Salt Lake City, Utah. We are a punk indie hardcore band. Attached to the email is a new track off of an EP we just put out entitled Potential Wasteland. The song is called Traditions." So we're going to play this now. Sorry that this took us so long to play. So enjoy.
Kids that walk the streets at night, we'll fill a blood so tight. We're taking it down with us. We stayed away patiently. Your broken hearts will never own. You hope it's fake to be left alone. All we ask is to be left alone. We're addicted to not take us anymore.
We are back. We just got a couple of emails left in our giant burlap bag, so we're going to blast on through them, and Adam White is going to take a blast first.
That sounds so bad.
This is from Erica. She said, hey, still enjoying the podcast and love the interview with Joey Cape, especially since I'm going to see Lagwagon with Cobra Skulls and Nothington on Tuesday. This would have been in February of 2012, by the way. Anyway, I just wanted to offer my input on kids and punk music. My friend's kids, age 4 and 6, absolutely love Bad Religion and Pennywise and are especially into Frank Turner right now. Favorite song is English Curse. And the older one is starting to get into Less Than Jake. I think that the stuff that they can sing along to is what they gravitate to. They don't like hardcore, too loud, and they can't understand the words. Yeah, me too. Anyways, they do like some kids' music, especially the educational ones by They Might Be Giants, which even as an adult, the science one is pretty cool. And I have a young niece who loves White Wives and Less Than Jake. So start them young, and maybe you can avoid the Bieberish music when they get older. Later, Erica. So there we go. I guess I should use this to like plug the blog that we're really lax in updating, but we totally will. Which is Rich, who all you podcast people love and isn't here right now. And myself and Jordan Baker from Pace Punk and Ben and John, Ben and Joe Pallone from, Ben Connolly and Joe Pallone from Punk News. We have a little blog called Dad's Not Punk, and it's at dadsnotpunk.com. And we talk about, I don't know, being internet screw-ups who talk about punk music who now have kids. So anyways, this topic is probably the kind of thing that would get discussed over there if we actually ever updated it. And yeah, we totally will. So anyways, I have like a 6-month-old, so I read this and I picture her being into the Bieberish music, and I want to avoid that. I don't know if I can because, you know, culture just kind of happens and it's not really my choice. But I've just decided that if she does, I'm just going to listen to, you know, old Ramones records at obnoxious levels and just, you know, inflict that upon her. Maybe as punishment.
Here's a question. Is, you know, some people, when their parents play music, they learn to love that and, like, base their music off that. And some people, when their parents play it, they hate that kind of music. How do you think you walk that fine line?
I don't really think it's the kind of thing that that I'm going to put that much premeditated thought into. Like, the music that we play is going to be the music that she'll be exposed to. And whether she decides that's something that she likes or she doesn't is, you know, is going to be really up to her. I mean, like, my mom fucking listened to the Eagles, and I hate the Eagles. And, you know, I don't know if there's anything she could have done that would have made me love the Eagles. So, you know, it's just, I'm not going to be too, I don't know. You hear all kinds of stuff about music and kids and all kinds of like, you know, even when, you know, when a woman is pregnant and they're talking about, oh, if you play music to them in the womb, then blah, 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 blah. And I don't know. It sounds, I mean, what I've come to learn is that a lot of this parenting stuff is bullshit. So I'm not really going to take any of this kind of like screwball advice or any of this weird kind of new age, oh, you should be exposing them to, you know, music XYZ at age Z because this will happen, you know, whatever. They'll be exposed to music and they'll be exposed to music that I don't like. And at some point, we're going to kind of stand at either end of a hallway and look at each other and we're each going to go into a different room and each turn up different music as loud as we can to see if we can drown each other out. And it'll be kind of like a competition. That's what I've decided right now. I don't know what my wife will think about that. It'll probably be really annoying for her, but she's not on a podcast right now, so she doesn't get the vote.
Maybe she'll be the ref.
Yeah, she could be the ref.
I like that.
Which is to say she could like go stand out in the yard where this racket isn't happening. I don't really know.
Well, moving on to our next email. We've got an email here with a stamp from Brazil, which is pretty wild. I'm digging this stamp on this thing. It's from Leonardo Leonardo Wernick of Brazil. And he's quite passionate about SOPA, so I'm just going to read this and then answer just parts of it. Here's what Leonardo said. He said, listening to the last podcast, I was surprised with the lack of indignation against SOPA by you guys and part of the community. I'm not an American and never lived in the U.S., but I thought accusations of anything being un-American was something lost in the 50s when McCarthy was chasing communists and people were burning comic books and shocked by Elvis's pelvis. I love this guy's a way of writing. I cannot explain how the simple use of the term seems absurd and ridiculous to me. Brendan Kelly, rhetoric outside, the three of you didn't seem so worried that the fact that the proposed laws like SOPA, PIPA, and ACTA, the worldwide SOAP, are dangerous to civil rights as they ignore people's privacies by implementing methods of constant surveillance on any action by anybody on the internet. It really isn't an Orwellian picture that goes much farther than the free downloading of the music in the net, and suddenly the Guy Fawkes masks don't seem so out of place. This is even more appalling than the infamous Patriot Act that was supposedly to help out stop terrorism. And lastly, I'm going to skip ahead in this thing. Oh, and he says, I was also expecting that you were going to bring on the subject of copyleft and how the old copyright model might be obsolete or outdated in today's global society. It seems clear to me that companies, and much more importantly artists, should be somehow financially rewarded by their work and the money they put on producing something. But the entertainment industry is desperately trying to hold on to a model that is simply not viable anymore. Maybe new definitions of media and property and copyright should be thought of, and new forms of making money in a new environment should be created instead of trying to criminalize and arrest consumers and creators of new technologies. Sorry for any language mistakes. Sincerely, Leonardo. And Leonardo, he brings some interesting points, and I'm going to address two of them. First of all, he seems concerned by SOPA, which is the Stop Online Piracy Act. Basically, what SOPA was is it allowed for more penalties with regards to ISPs. An ISP is what's called an Internet Service Provider, which doesn't mean what most people think it means. An Internet Service Provider is basically any website where users can contribute to the website without direct monitoring from the website itself. Punk News, for example, would be an ISP because people can post on there. When I use the phrase ISP, a lot of people says, he doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not what an ISP is. But under American copyright definition, an ISP has a very ambiguous definition, but it's safe to say websites like Dig, websites like Punk News, websites like OkCupid, where people can put on their own content, is called an ISP. Under SOPA, basically, people that believe their copyright is being infringed can do larger scale takedowns and have certain domain names forfeited or placed in jeopardy or placed in suspension. People, I guess, are making an argument that that's goes against freedom of speech because copyright infringement is strict liability, meaning even if you don't know you're infringing on a copyright, then you're still liable. And also people say it's against freedom of speech because the website itself can't necessarily control who puts content on the website. Well, I've got good news for you, Leonardo. Basically, it looks like SOPA is dead. I actually think SOPA was good in its original theory because we've got a lot of websites that are basically putting up content, like a lot like MediaShare and Rapid Fire and all these guys saying, oh, we're protected because they're third-party websites third party contributors, not us, even though it actually is them. And so you have all this illegal movie, illegal music downloading. However, what a lot of people that drafted the bill were members of the motion picture industry, and they basically went too far and they asked for too much. Had they been reasonable in their requests and had it formulated more like takedowns, like we see in the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, I think it would have went through. But because they asked for so much and had the penalties so high, I think that basically Congress couldn't come to an agreement, or they couldn't come to an agreement on how the bill should actually be drafted. So I think it's dead in the water. So I don't think you need to worry about SOPA for the time being. Also, Leonardo said that we should really concern ourselves with copyleft and maybe the copyright model is outdated. A lot of people in the punk news community are making that argument, but I find that to be a short-sighted argument. The reason is because in most industrialized nations, the way we make our money is through intellectual property. The United States, Canada, and even Brazil do very little actual physical production, so all their value is in intangible properties. So if you make copyrights, what they call, quote, copyleft, meaning there is no such thing as a copyright, then basically we'd be cutting our own throats because we'd have no income whatsoever. You are right in saying that current technology in illegally stealing, illegally copying files is outpacing our abilities to police them. That's true, and I think the sad part of that is basically it means if people can steal something and get away with it and not get caught, they'll steal something, which I find to be incredibly sad. What I find to be most, I guess, appalling about copyright infringement is it's a lack of respect for the artist. Because it means I'm just going to take this artist's work and not compensate him at all. I'm entitled to it, which really bums me out. So the answer is who knows what the hell the answer is. But my personal opinion is that I think Congress needs to develop ways that we can track down these mass copyright infringers, or at least pursue them to a greater degree with more severe penalty rather than just a takedown. And individual infringers should still be penalized because I think copyright infringement is a terrible thing, but not to the violative levels of the mass infringers, which is really what is harming a lot of our intellectual property values. So that's my opinion on that. Leonardo, thanks for your thought out letter, and keep listening to the podcast.
Good response, John.
Thanks, Armando. I try.
Clearly you did. That was a verbal essay of sorts.
Yeah, people say I'm long-winded, which is probably true. But it's just because I care, Armando. I care.
No, I think that it's best that you were long-winded, because if you give short, uncaring responses, you just wouldn't be John.
It's true.
All right, so it looks like we have one last question.
And, take it away, Armando. Wrap this bad boy on up.
All right, this one is dated January 20th, 2012, from Ross. The subject is Greek punk. And here's what Ross has to say. Hi, guys. I've been challenged by a Greek colleague to find some Greek punk. She claims it doesn't exist. Prove her wrong. Also, get Rich back in. I want a What Would Rich Verducci Wristband. Or What Would Rich Verducci Do Wristband. Cheers, Ross. All right. While John was talking, I was able to use Google and see what I could find about Greek punk. And obviously, if I were to do a more thorough search, I could definitely give you a better answer. But I will say this much. It does exist. And it apparently developed around the 1980s. The scene was very small. And, to this day, it still exists and even has many facets of different kinds of sounds, from straight-up punk to oi to hardcore to even breeding some nationalist right-wing bands. In fact, there is a... There's a right-wing band called Hellgrinder. They were formed in 1998, and they became popular because they released a Greek version of Soldiers of Death's song Speak English or Die, called, Speak Greek or Die. Well, the original and apparently the cover are both, I want to say a bit racist and nationalist.
Yeah, but I'm going to jump in. SOD is an Anthrax side project, and it's supposed to be silly. Like, they're being, like, kill the poor,
Well, you know what? Every time that song has been referenced to me has actually been referenced by a bunch of very racist nationalist dudes, so I guess it didn't go the way they expected it to.
Well, it didn't, but that's not Anthrax's fault.
Well, I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying that, at the very least, hey, issue a statement and be like, you guys are dumb. That's not what it was about. Peace.
Well, I mean, they did in like 1989.
Oh, wow. Yeah. John, I was one when that happened. Anywho, I don't. Okay, SOD and Anthrax, their whole thing. A bit satire and silly, for sure. I don't know if Hellgrinders could be, you know, taken at the same, you know, like, I don't know if they're necessarily silly. That might have gotten lost in translation. But the point is...
Literally.
Yeah. Hi-oh. No, but the point is that it looks like the Greek punk scene, just like, you know, the punk scene of the rest of the world, is full of many different styles and takes and interpretations all across the political and musical spectrum. So I would suggest maybe doing a much more thorough Google search than I did, and you'll definitely find something. In fact, there's even a YouTube video compiling the top 10 Greek punk songs ever. So it seems like once you've watched that, you've got enough in your arsenal to come back to your friend and be like, ha, you were wrong. It took me a year and a half to answer you, but you're wrong.
And Ross, if in the ensuing year you could not have Googled Greek punk and then clicked on the Wikipedia article, which is the first thing that comes up, which is about Greek punk, I don't know if we can help you.
This is true.
To wrap it all up, I guess, apparently we asked for songs in August of 2010, because we got a whole slew of them then, but we're going to play another one just to, you know, close us out. So it's from John Taylor, and he has attached a song from his band Street Cheetah, recently recorded for consideration for the use of your weekly podcast. I'm really sorry if you recorded it just for the podcast for many reasons. The track is titled The Light and is featured on our most recent demo, Beach House. If you want more information, you can, you know, check their Bandcamp page out, which is streetcheetah.bandcamp.com. So thanks for sending that in. And it's so crazy this was sent in 2010, because my life is very different than it was then, and I'm presumably other people's were too. But thanks for sending your song in, John, and I hope that everyone loves the song called The Light by Street Cheetah.
Thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. As always, the opinions expressed on the Punk News Podcast are the opinions of those making them exclusively and do not in any way represent the views, opinions, ideas, or anything else of punknews.org. As always, and as we've said 10 times during this podcast, you can reach us at podcast@punknews. So please send us some email, podcast@punknews.org. So please send us some email, and we'll answer you back next time. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.